Session number 27053.
Mr. Dre, reel 13. Now, we're talking about after you captured the positions in the Adolf Hitler line.
Yeah, about 28th of May it was when that fell.
Right.
Well,
I thought with you being wounded a couple of days earlier.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I went to the MO, to the medical officer was there then, and he looked at this wound. And he said, you should have come in earlier. And I said, well, we couldn't. And the stretcher bearer had said that, you know, it would be up fairly well. So he said, you ought to have been stitched. And a sergeant in the medical, a medical sergeant in the RMI room, with this, he stitched me. The wound was about 3 inches long, perhaps 3-4 inches. They froze it. They didn't. They give me an injection like a dentist would, and he stitched it just like you'd stitch up a sack. I got a row of stitch in now, just like, with not individual stitches, he stitched it like a sack, put a dressing on it, and told me to report back to have the gut removed sometime later. And people today, they were getting thousands of compensation and God knows what for such a thing. Weeks off work, they didn't. And there was far worse wounds than that, and boys still kept going forward.
But did it hurt?
It hurt, yeah, it was sore. I mean, you know, it was dead sore and that, but it healed. You were young, and it was a flesh wound sort of thing. But it goes down as a wound. In actual fact, it would have qualified me to wear a wound stripe for that one. But there's a category, they have to do it, wounded but stayed on duty. And why they do this, if later on there is trouble with your wound, it was to do with pensions and that, when your invalidity pensions after the war. I understand this. I've asked about it. And it was quite common for people to be wounded. But if it was the memo considered it superficial and not necessary to evacuate to a rear hospital or anything, a field hospital, they had to report you had been wounded. And that's what I was reported on my documents. It would be wounded, remained on duty. And so I did. So on we went. And that by this time, we'd broken them. And we trudged. The lorries took us then forward. Another division had gone on. And we passed through a place called Frosinone, the next place I remember. And then Rome fell. Rome fell on the 5th of June, just before D-Day. And we passed through the outskirts of Rome at night. So we never saw much of Rome, but we passed through, and the lorries driving us, and we've got a little bit further up. Now, the next stop the Germans had decided to stop us was way up the top. You see, built right across the leg of Italy, these lines. And the line that he had hoped to stop us at, just north of Rome, hadn't been completed. But it was enough to delay us somewhat. And among this, there was a village called Montegabbione.
Gabbione.
Montegabbione, yeah. It's spelt M-O-T. And it was a hilltop village.
Was that in the Leary of...
No, this is
sorry,
north
yeah.
Now. We're north of Rome now.
Gotcha, right.
We're heading towards Florence. Weren't going there. There's a lake, a big lake, if you look in the centre of Italy, called Lago di Trasimeno. It's Trasimini, the Lake of Trasimini. And that's where we were destined to finish our fighting for a while.
What happened when he got to Montegabbione?
Before then, you see, that they'd put us onto the ground and the Germans were falling back, and all we'd done was trudge day in, day out. It was dusty and hot, and we were in the foothills, taking the villages on the foothills. And that usually the Italians would hang white sheets out the window and ring the bells, and they would come to greet us with jugs of wine, and we were weary and footsore, trudging along, but the main force was in the valleys and that, but we had to clear the flanks, and we were on the right flank, moving up to it's a sort of extension of the Leary Valley, but we'd passed out because we were north of Rome. And once we saw the red white flags and the people come to greet us and one thing another, I wanted
to ask, that's exactly how did you get over the Italians?
Oh, lovely. They'd come down and the old ladies would stroke our face and shy young girls would give us a glass and they'd pour this vino in. And we had a lieutenant with us, young Ferris, Lieutenant Ferris, and he was a bit peeved because we're drinking this wine and we had nothing in our stomachs and it was dry and hot. And I always remember, there he was, rather fastidious sort of officer, only very young, and a big Italian come down and he had about 3 days stubble and a typical peasant, and he threw his arms around him and hugged and kissed him, and he was most embarrassed, and we're all sort of thinking it funny. But we got into the villages. We went into one village just prior to the name does escape me a little bit, but we got into a village, I remember, and all this happened. The villagers were there greeting us, and suddenly some Italians who reckoned they were partisans, God knows what they were really, they came in and they said, Tedeschi, venire qua, it means comes here, the Tedeschi, the Germans are coming. And so we had rapidly dug in, and we'd had a lot of wine that had been given us, and all the villagers fled into the church, and our sergeant Sags come round, get to, stand to, and we all got in our position. We had had enough sense to dig in. He had got our positions right, and we waited, but the Germans never came to us. But it was a bit of a fright that night, or that evening, when they came and said the Germans were doing a counterattack on us. But the next one was Montegabbione. And we got to Montegabbione, and we weren't in the town, of course. She was up there, and we looked up at it, and there was no white sheets or no noise or nothing. So we sent a company up there, and the company got up into the village, and there was a lot of firing going on. So by this time, I'd been transferred. The battalion diary records it, actually, that I'd been transferred. I told you originally I'd been trained to drive a Bren gun carrier. And what happened, they train you to do this, so that if there's casualties among the Bren gun carrier platoon when you're in action, they've always got spare drivers. Although at that time I was just a rifleman. And somewhere in the diary, I have it here somewhere, a copy, where I'd been transferred to S Company. That's the specialist company where they had the mortars, the signalers, and Bren gun carriers. So I'd got in back in to the Bren gun platoon, much to my pleasure. I think I seem to recall that I had asked about could I get in the Bren gun, that's what I'd been trained for, and a vacancy comes, so they transferred me. To all events, our lads were up there in a fighting, and there was some heavy fighting going on, and they rushed us forward in the Bren gun carriers. Now, they then instructed the Bren guns to, there was an olive grove at the foot of a hill where of the village. All the Bren gun carriers had to pull up, the drivers had to pull the carriers off, the crews had to get out, pick up their rifles, and go up to the village to help the rifle company that was up there. That was what we were detailed to do while the carriers and their drivers waited in the olive groves. So we went up there, and we were a bit cautious going up. We went up in sort of ACAC formation, this patrol, like a patrol, and we were going up, and there's a big wall just under the village, typical village, Italian village, hillside village, this wall. We were going up there, and a very good friend of mine called Warner, I don't know what his name was, whether it was Francis, but we called him Jackie, because there was an English film star, a chappie called Jack Warner, and we called him Jackie Warner. And he was two paces in front of me in this patrol. And there was suddenly a crack, and poor Jack spun, and he had been shot right through the head by a sniper. It caught him from some ivy that up on the top of this wall. Well, we instantly froze, and there was nothing we could do. We couldn't run or anything, but we raked this ivy as much as we could with all the arms we'd got. And it suddenly done the trick. Either the whoever had fired had bolted or was shot up there. And we then got up and we found the situation where there was a school, a small school up there, and a lot of our men were in there. And they told us to get in a house opposite.
Yeah, you'd left your Bren gun carriers behind.
Yeah, they're way down the valley. They're sheltering. We are now become riflemen with the companies. And all we're doing, reinforcing the company. I think, I'm not sure what company I was reinforcing, whether it was our seed company, my old rifle company. But we got in this house, and the Germans were the other side of the road out of us. And they couldn't get, they'd got the school covered, and they were shooting into the school just beside us in this house. And they were pushing us hard. They'd brought in, and they thought they were in trouble. And suddenly shells started flying across and smashing into the Germans' positions. Well, the house is just opposite us of this road. And apparently one of the officers in the school had made a bolt down across out the back way and got down, and he was directing tank fire onto these German positions. But we got in, and the Germans had got in our row of houses. It was a row sort of thing. We were in the M1. And there was one wounded and one killed. He got killed. They'd shot him through the window in our room where we were. And I don't know where he come from, but suddenly there was a crash in the door, and in come the padre. And he said, pretty sticky, we'll have to get out. He said to me, you keep them off, Dre, and while we go. And they were going to go out the back window. Now, it was built on the side of a hill, I told you. So the back door, or the back of the house, was a lot deeper than the front. So out went the first boy, and he was on the drain pipe, and it broke away. And so the rest of them had to jump. And believe it or not, it was nearly 30 feet. And I've seen this jump only a week or two ago, and I don't know how we done it. But they went, and I was in there, and there was a lad called Inns, spelt I-N-N-E-S, Inns, I think it was an E-S, and he was wounded. And I said to him, this lad, he's a funny lad, he used to say, ah, bugger it, let's go Stalag. This was a pet saying of his, meaning let's get taken prisoner of war and he'd be out of the war, you understand? And he was in there with me, and this other lad dead, I don't know who he was. And I said to Inns, you can't go, boy. And the Germans were the other side of the road. So and the house caught fire. They fired a phosphorus grenade at it, and it was on fire. So I didn't know what to do. And he said, well, you better go. I said, you can't. So I had a dirty old hanky, and I went to the door, and I put my arm out. I thought, if they shoot, it'll only hit my hand. And nothing happened. So I went in, and I said to Inns, come on out. And I dragged him out into the middle of the road. I said, you're going to go, Stalag. And I was terribly frightened, and so was he. And I laid him in the road. I went back in, and I thought, I'll go out the window now. But I looked at this other lad, and I thought, he can't be left in here to die or to burn. And so I dragged him out and put him beside Inns. And no one fired on us. The Germans didn't fire on me. And they let me go back in again, and they must have thought perhaps there was a third or fourth one that I was going to bring out.
Now, the second one was already dead.
I wasn't going to burn him, let him burn in the house. He was one of our lads. So I went in, and as soon as I was cleared in the house, I knew I was free. I went out the window, and I jumped with them. And the rest had rolled down the hill a bit and among the olive trees, and they were raking the house. They raked the house with fire, so that the Germans couldn't look out the windows and shoot down on us. And I jumped this and crashed down. It was an awful crash, but I still had my rifle. And I rolled down and doubled down across this hill and joined the padre and the other three or four chaps that were there. And we got away. And when I was there about 3 weeks ago, I looked at it and I said to the lads that I was with, how would you like to jump from there? Of course, it was fear that booted us out the window. It wasn't bravery or anything else. It was that or die, one or the other, so we jumped. And none of us broke legs or anything. We all got away. And that was the last I'd saw of Monte Gabbione, because we got down to the valley, and then another company went up, and they actually took it, but mainly because the Germans were pulling out that night. They pulled out, and when they got up there, there was very few Germans around, and I was back with S Company with the carriers again, so I didn't go up into the village anymore. We went on up to the through the valley following the Germans.
Now, when you went back, was that the first time you went back?
First time was 3 weeks ago.
I mean, you know, that's...
There was a tiny stamina in there, and we went in for a beer, did my three companions and myself, and there was an old lady serving in there, and we were having a beer, and she gave us permission to eat a bit of a bite that we were carrying in the bar. And I went up to her, and I said, "How old are you, madam?" And I know it's a rude thing to ask the girl. She said, "I'm 80. I said, "Have you always lived in Montegabione?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Was you here when the Germans were here?" She said, "Yes." And I said, "And when they were fighting for it?" She said, "Yes." And she told, I think she said they were underneath some buildings somewhere in there. I said, "I was one of the English soldiers that was doing the fighting here." And she couldn't believe it. She told Paul Reed, my friend, and what a wonderful soldiers we were, how we give them food, how we treated them so well. And she told other men in the bar, in the next bar next door, and people came in. It was a little shop come bar, you know, the sort of setup like they have in France. And when people come in, she said, "There's an old English soldier that was here in the fighting in the war," and telling all this sort of thing. And the lads were giving me a bit of stick about this old lady, because she'd have been 20, she was 80, and I'd have been 18, you see, or just about. And I said to them, "Look, the last thing on my mind when I was in Montegabione was girls, and she was probably well and truly deep down in a vault or cellar somewhere." So there was that. The people that gave her sweets and food were the lads that came afterwards clearing things up. They weren't infantry soldiers.
It was quite interesting. I mean, you hadn't been there for all that time, 60 years.
No.
Was it as you remember?
No, it wasn't at first. I said, "That's not Montegabione." And he said, "Well, yes, it is. There's the sign." Because all the foothill that we'd come down, where we'd hid our carriers and that, all little bungalows and houses built, all on the slope. So it looked much bigger. All we saw was the pink roofs of the houses with this huge wall around it in 1944. But since then, they've built, and I must tell you, the school has been rebuilt, and it's a junior school. And we went in, and there was a girl sat at a desk typing, and she spoke fluent English. She was a teacher in there, making up some reports or something. She didn't mind at all. And she, when I told her I'd been a soldier in this, and I told her the story of it, she said, how interesting, I'll be telling the other teachers. She didn't come from Montegabione. She'd got the job, I suppose. Where she come from, I don't know, but she was Italian, of course. And she was some interested to me to tell her the story of how we fought over in this very school where she sat. So that was interesting as well. And
That was next door to the house you were at.
Yes, that's right.
That's where the rest of them were.
Yes, it's only about 20 yards across a little road, like.
And the actual building you evacuated, had that changed?
Yes, there's been an extension. It looked like another story on the top of it. The part I was in was a single story, but now there's a double story, which... So, yes, they put another story along them, and bigger.
So the whole thing, it wasn't so much that your memories were wrong as that things had changed.
Oh, they changed.
Your memories were accurate when
yes,
you went back.
Yes,
in the sense of
no
as
question.
It was then.
Yeah. I'd never been up to where the calf was and that sort of thing. Obviously, that's the centre of the village. But it's only a small village. But why they defended it, it looked right across this valley where the main... army was coming through, you see. So they had perfect observation, and they could direct shell fire and all sorts from up there, you see. That's why they were defending it. Well, that, I suppose they were fighting a sort of Italian miniature Dunkirk for their troops. They were fighting these delay in actions.
Now, this would be in June now. Would you know what date in June? You probably don't. I mean,
Montegabione, no, I don't know the actual...
But it was June.
It was June, yeah. It was June.
Well, that's close enough, but they can look it up in the regimental history.
Yeah.
So what happened to you next then? I mean, you got back down the hill and then captured the village.
Well, then I was laughing, really, because I was, by this time, with the carriers. And the carriers normally, see, the lads that really... catch it are the lads in the rifle companies. So then we got nearly up to the lake, and again they were short of men. They'd taken some casualties with mines and one thing and another.
Now this is lake, the name of the lake?
Trasimene.
Trasimene.
Yeah. And we were going up on the left side of it. On the left side. The Irish Brigade was on our left, and now he was fighting us here. He started fighting us. So up I went again with these patrols clearing the right flank with the on the approach to the lake. Again, with the rifle companies, I had to go up. Well, not only me, the crews of the carriers were sent forward. And
what do you remember of these Bren carrier patrols?
Oh, they were pretty good. I rather liked them. And I remember going across an open piece of ground, and the Germans opened up with a machine gun, believe it or not. It was 1/4 inch of mild steel plating on the side of them. And I wasn't a driver. I was a crew member. I was capable of doing anything on that carrier. There was usually a carrier commander, an NCO, junior NCO, or sometimes up to the rank of a sergeant, and the driver. There was a wireless operator and a machine gunner. Well, I was the machine gunner on this thing, and when we went across this plain, and he opened up at us, and we were making a rush forward to try and secure it was a bridge that we were after, and he was hammering the side of this carrier with a machine gun, and I remember putting my hands, because it's very bumpy, there's no springs on them, and it's very painful as they bump along, and you're sat on a little bit of sawbow, as we called it in them days. They call it expanded styrene or something these days, sawbow rubber. And we was banging, and I had my hands back against the engine and my hands against the side where the bullets were hitting. And I remember terrible stinging of my hands as the bullets were hitting the other side of the plate. My hands were this side, and I had to pull my hands away. And of course, I was being thrown about then, but to support myself, I put my hands there. But as the bullets hit the side, and there was all, when we looked at it, it was all the little potholes, or pits like. They hadn't gone
through.
No, it hadn't. About 1/8 of an inch, that's all deep. It was ordinary ammunition they were firing. But they fire about 800 a minute, you know, them machine guns. And so they were certainly rattling our Bren gun carriers, but they were armoured enough to stop any danger to us or injury to us.
Now, what would you do on one of these patrols as you got further forward? I mean, how did you help the company you were supporting?
Well, that's it.
Would it be just one of you, first of all? One Bren gun carrier, or were you in twos?
Oh, no, there were two or three of us, yeah. We'd rush forward, come up beside them, and get out of it quickly with our machine gun. We were carrying a Bren gun, you see, obviously, and ammunition. Jump out, usually the driver would turn and take the carrier back. He'd go back a bit, and we'd come out, rush forward with our Bren gun and join them and take ammunition to them. And sometimes we didn't use the Bren gun, we were just taking ammunition for them. Very often it might be their food or water we were carrying. And later on, they fixed them so we had stretchers. I never was on one, but they had Bren gun carriers with stretchers. They'd cut away some of the plating and had stretchers, and they went forward to get the wounded out and bring wounded back on them. But what I was with was mainly we rushed forward with ammunition, with our Bren gun to help them, or supplies. If it was a tricky day, if they were shelling them and mortaring them and you couldn't get through to them, and they were being pressed and they radioed back that's the only thing an infantry can do is push the Bren gun carriers forward. Tell them to make a dash for it to get up to them.
Anything else you remember about
I remember we got up to the lake. The Irish Brigade were up there on our right. The Germans had pulled back to the north. I went out on a patrol with one just up there, and I remember we got up, and it's one of the very few times the Germans challenged us, but we were just a recce patrol, not a fighting patrol, so we pulled back quietly and done a bunk as quick as we could, but we knew the position of the Germans, we reported back the positions where they were. They had challenged us, but then we were up, it had gone on a little way, and I remember having a paddle in the water before they took us back. At night it was, moonlight night, and we went in and the water was very warm. because it was very shallow. It went out slowly, and it was very warm water, so we were able to paddle and splash about, you know, to get some of the dust off us. And then, of course, that was our fighting in Italy finished. We were not finished for good, but finished for a while, because we didn't know it. They said we were being pulled out for rest. They took us back then. We went back by lorry all the way down to a place called Tivoli, which is on the eastern side of Rome.
Now, when is this? Is this still June, or are we edging into July now?
We're in July. I forget what date it was we pulled out to go back out the line, but it was July. We're coming into July now. This I'm passing this very quickly because about the way out. But
do you remember much about the journey back?
Not well. They took us back. There was nothing at all about going back into to Tivoli. We just got on lorries and were taken back. There we were in little bivvy tents. We didn't have to dig in. Beautiful weather, and they gave us leave in Rome. Lorries took us into Rome, and they really let us rest. And
what was leave like in Rome?
Oh, wonderful, really. Because when you're in the line, you don't draw no money, and so you've accumulated a bit of money, and so the quartermaster gives you your money. Incidentally, we didn't. We used Allied currency there. It was 400 of the pound, I remember, when we went into Rome. And of course, there was women in Rome. Some of them appreciated boys with money to spend, and one thing or another. There was drink, and there was ice cream. There was souvenirs. We had ordnance with the Pope. So many men from each regiment went in there into the St. Peter's Church, and I was one of them, representing our mob, and yeah.
What do you remember of that? The audience of the Pope. Well, that's something unusual.
Well, we went in, and they carried him in on a throne, shoulder high, by these Swiss guards, and there was a lot of shoveling, and he was speaking in Latin or Italian. We couldn't understand it, and it was terribly boring, really, and he was blessing us as he went through the crowd, the sign of the crucifix or the cross and one thing or another. And you know, we were a bit cynical. We knew that he'd been doing the same thing to the Germans a few weeks before, blessing them as they were there, you know. And so I don't like to be disrespectful about it, but we were a bit cynical about it. And they gave us a little medallion thing as we came out for the glorious liberation of Rome, and I sent it home, and where it's gone I don't know. I think one of my sisters had the little medallion. I've never heard about where it was or anything else. But
so you enjoyed your leaving Rome, but for that?
Oh yes, and they exploited us and all that sort of thing. Yes, it was early July. We set off on the train from Tivoli to go down all the way to Taranto by train. They were in cattle trucks. We left Rome on the 4th of July. And so you see, we'd been up to the front and back again. It's about a month to get up to Trasimeno, because Rome fell on June the 5th, and so that's where we'd been.
So you'd been in, you probably got to Tivoli just in very late June.
Yes, that's right. It was, well, it seemed about a week we were there. We weren't in Rome all that week. We were in Tivoli, but went in for the day by lorry. They took us in. I think I had 2 days in Rome playing about.
Now, what was the train journey like?
Yeah, well, this is, we came back on the train. It was cattle trucks, and it was fairly long-winded, you know, driving back down there. But we were sat in these trucks, and we got to a little town. I only know this from the diary of our battalion diary.